You're listening to Circle of Hope Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 3800 Marlton Pike. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. or 7 o'clock p.m.
Let's start. Just right, jumping right into Isaiah. I'm going to read this, and then at the end, you get a chance to kind of be the crescendo. You will. We'll read that last yellow line together, and it's the pinnacle of hope that Isaiah is bringing us, this impossible dream that he has, that he was given by God. So listen to the beginning and then be ready to come in as with as much gusto as the kids and I were doing with Parumpa Pum Pum. You don't have to shout, but you know, this is like a declaration. A shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. From his roots, a branch will bear fruit. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and of might, the Spirit of the knowledge and fear of the Lord, and he will delight in the fear of the Lord. He will not judge by what he sees with his eyes, or decide by what he hears with his ears, but with righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. He will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth. With the breath of his lips he will slay the wicked. Righteousness will be his belt, and faithfulness the sash around his waist. The wolf will live with the lamb. The leopard will lie down with the goat. The calf and the lion and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them. The cow will feed with the bear. Their young will lie down together, and the lion will eat straw like the ox. The infant will play near the cobra's den, and the young child will put its hand into the viper's nest. They will neither harm nor destroy on all my holy mountain, for the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord as the waters covered the sea. This impossible vision of the future that Isaiah is bringing us, this amazing water that's going to cover the whole earth, this knowledge of God is going to change even like the created order. I think it's kind of hard to get our heads wrapped around that. It requires poetry. It requires this vision. You know, how many different unexpected pairings can Isaiah come up with? How many could we come up with? You know, the chimpanzee will, you know, hang out with the little colobus monkey or whatever they like to hunt. You know, there's all kinds of different ways that we can imagine this. But I thought that the best way to get our hearts and our heads wrapped around this was with a story of my own. So I wrote a story that I want to read to you, and I'll talk about it a little bit at the end. But it's mostly a story, and I hope you can imagine with me. This is where I imagine it happening, on the holy mountain. She stood helplessly at a measured, safe distance, staring in abject despair. How was this happening? What had gotten into her little one? Hadn't she taught her better than this? Hadn't she consistently, unswervingly, unfailingly admonished her against behavior such as this? It was unthinkable what her little one was doing. How could she do this? How? She was angry, frustrated, infuriated, scared. So utterly terrified she couldn't move. How could she? Everything within her, every muscle and tendon, was as taut as an unsprung hunter's trap, either ready to snap and keep her there forever, or fling her away in a twang. Her nerves could capture her in stone terror, and she could bleed out eternity immobile as if her foreleg were crunched by an actual trap, or, and hopefully this was the case, she was ready to bounce herself away in one bleeding bound over any of the hills at the foot of this mountain, just as soon as it took one more step in this direction. Or maybe one more. Her body pulsed in readiness. She twitched from the tension of this interminable moment. The anchor of her heart, her baby, her final joy, her love, walked toward a danger greater than she had yet known. This fearsome brute, which had her strung so tightly, so desperately wanting to run, and so paralyzed with motherly love. How could she be doing this to me? How? Her initial cries of warning were now silenced in the overwhelming flood of fear. She had never been this still and at the same time so close to something so deadly. She had spent the springs and summers of her youth in the high meadows, carelessly almost, filling her belly with sweet grasses and clovers. Winters were in the low country, and sometimes there wasn't much food, but she had never remembered the snow after a week or two of spring. She did remember the wolves, that first fall, in the bottoms of some river valley on the other side of the mountain. They came, nasty and snarling, clever creatures that took down several of her friends that day. She didn't remember the friends, only the blood on the wolves' snouts. She vowed then never to bleed in a predator's mouth. She would not be prey. And this thing before her now was twice the size, no, three times the size, or four, of those wolves that had stalked her. And they had stalked her every moment of her life since, even when they weren't stalking her. They were. But her faithfulness to her promise stayed true. She had survived for many seasons and through many dangers, real and imagined. She caught their scent on the wind and ran fast enough away. She listened long enough to every twig cracking in the trees, shot her head to attention, and stayed stiff-necked and vigil every time she suspected. Every time. And it was worth it. It was all worth it. How many children had she brought into this world over those many seasons of survival? Four or five? One year there were two. She knew that for certain. This one would be the last. This one whom she loved and feared for with all her of her would be the last one she would bear. And her disappearing joy now skipped gleefully toward a monstrous peril. Though she had never seen one like it before, she knew it would redden its muzzle with her lamb's blood. Its teeth were like a wolf, but bigger, because it was much, much bigger. She saw its huge claws, black in blonde paws with dark pads underneath. Oh God, she was close enough to see the pads under its feet. Why was she still here? The hulk had lay down in the grass in front of her baby. It flicked its long, tufted tail and flopped its ridiculously shaggy head over its foreleg. And then the moment she had been fearing came. Her lamb stepped confidently within swiping distance of those mighty limbs. And as she did, the predator opened wide its mouth to reveal teeth which were indeed larger than any wolf's. She stood unflinching, now completely numbed by the impossibility of her circumstance. But instead of biting, the animal closed its mouth and licked her lamb on the head as she nuzzled into the shagginess below its chin. Her lamb had done this so many times with her. She'd always loved to sit right under her head, and she loved the peace of those common moments, sharing each other's warmth in the cold of the early spring mornings. Occasionally she would let her own head rest upon the lamb for a minute. It was nice. But such luxuries of comfort were too lavish for the reality they lived in. She thought better of too much rest and comfort. Vigilance had proven a better friend than any other. She had tried to teach this lamb, like all the others, the secrets of her vigilance. Listen. Listen hard. Never stop listening. It doesn't matter what it might be, because it could be danger. Anything can be danger. Some things you have seen before or heard before, although they were not dangerous before, could be dangerous a second time. Do not trust your previous experience. Nothing is certain. If you have not seen something or smelled something before, it is most likely danger. Assume danger, and smell it too. Many dangers come silently, but they cannot escape the wind. Wolves sometimes know the winds, though, so you must look and listen and smell always, never not on guard. This was her motto. This was her survival. All these lessons crumbled now before her in a broken heap. Her lamb now lay with this lying beast as if that monster and not she herself were the mother. As if life were not as she had known it. That was a yawn, she thought. It yawned and then it licked my baby. The lamb nibbled the whiskers now, coming from the predator's face. After some minor snarls, it gently, yes, gently, nibbled her lamb's ear. It bared its giant teeth, and probably more with its black lips than with those daggers for teeth. It quietly corrected her baby and went back to its repose. What had happened to the world? She no longer felt like she herself would certainly die. Her body was safe for a moment, but she could not let her instincts go. She could not believe even for a moment that what was happening was anything but the delay of her lamb's death. She had failed as a mother. Her last viable progeny would wait patiently to be eaten by something bigger and fiercer than any menace this sheep had ever encountered. Her muscles flexed and released, and into their softness spread the ache of rigid attention strain. It felt like safety. The burn of lactic acid reminded her of all she had known in her many seasons. Her body knew what was good, more than she could shape a thought of it in her mind. She could trust that pain. And yet the scene before her undermined that faith. Could the lamb know more than her about this resting brute? It was obviously a killer. It could swallow her lamb in two bites. But it hadn't done that. The two lay together in peace. The serenity she saw gave her courage to reinitiate her calls. She bleated her most desperate cry of urgency. Come! Come quick! Come away! The lamb perked her ears and bleated back in her tiny voice, a sound so content it burned her mother's ears. It seemed her lamb was falling asleep. The sides of the giant heaved in steady rhythm as well. The immediate threat was definitively over. Despite this, she could not, and this was her greatest shame, force her feet to fall any closer. Her lamb was just as lost now as if it were devoured. It might as well have been eaten, because where the lamb had gone, she could not follow. As much as she wanted to rescue her lamb, she could not approach their slumber. Instead, she slowly turned and fixed her eyes on the hills to which she had so desperately desired to leap. The mortal panic gone, but her heart's direction still the same. She trudged away from her lamb, from that lion, sadder than she had ever been. She managed a few sideways glances over her haunches and saw the same serenity which broke her heart. It confounded her. It troubled her. It cut her. How can this be? She lost herself in these mysteries for a time as she plodded up the hill and into a stand of trees. Then a twig snapped to her right. She bolted upright and stood perfectly still. Another crack. A human child emerged from behind a tree with a pack of wolves tailing him. She flew left as if she were still a young sheep and disappeared from their sight. The lion stirred and looked up the hill with half-opened eyelids. He saw the boy descending the hill with his pack. What good could come of this? He liked this fuzzy white thing that had come to take a nap with him. This mountain was colder than his home, and he appreciated the warmth that it produced. It was so pleasant to sit at peace. He had a foggy recollection of some other pleasure that may have dominated a moment like this in his past. Something like hunger used to prick holes in any peace. But now he felt nothing but satisfaction. It seemed that everything that came to him was a gift. This fuzzy white thing, the perpetual fullness of his belly, the warmth of the sunlight on his face, and now these wolves, led by a little child. Yes, child. He was previously aware of the small humans. He welcomed the one who was coming to him now, and his wolf brethren. That's the story. Now I want to say a couple things about it. Advent is for adapting to a future that doesn't make sense to us most of the time. Isaiah wrote this passage as a vision of hope for his country's future. He saw through the doom he was forecasting for his people. The Assyrians were going to conquer them. This was definitely going to happen, though many people didn't believe him, and indeed it did happen. But a remnant would remain, and the peace that the new leader would bring was an unprecedented peace. Peace that would resonate through the natural order. Impossible peace. It's hard to see. Isaiah received a vision of peace that was bigger than he even understood. Was the shoot that would come up from Jesse an ancestor? The leader who would bring this peace? Was that person an ordinary ruler? No. This is Jesus. And he brought about the righteousness for the needy. That's us. In ways that Isaiah couldn't even begin to see. And he's coming again to bring us a peace that we still can't fathom. This new earth seems to be what Isaiah is reaching toward when all of the dangerous animals, lions, snakes, wolves, become friendly with children. Advent is for mystery. Advent is for wondering. Advent is for lamenting how drawn we are by our instincts and how unthinkable it is that God would come and join us in our humanity. The sheep in the story is every one of us. We are conditioned to a world that is promised to pass away. We are made into an image that will not last. We experience the new reality with God with us, and it's hard to forget the old ways, the years of training, the history we can't see beyond, our own personal histories and the collective histories of humanity. Hard to get out of that cycle. Hard to see over that horizon. Advent is for feeling that tension between the known present and the unknown future. Any rational person would predict that the lion would devour the lamb. Any rational person would predict that the future will be as bleak as the present and the past that was before it. Learning to be lamb-like or childlike, receiving the moment and being changed as that lion was changed, is what we need a season of Advent for. Wait. Don't jump to the same conclusions. Advent brings about a different set of conclusions, brings about a promise for a future that is different. It's different. Don't jump over the hill away from the holy mountain where things actually have become different. Advent is a time to lament all the lambs we have lost to our refusal to change. It's a time to repent from the filters that reject any new reality. How often do new things happen in us and around us that we refuse to believe? Advent is for puzzling those out, for staying in the confusion and wonder long enough for the Prince of Peace to be born. So how might we do that? I think one of the best ways that the church has is to worship, to get our hearts moving together in some confusion, to get underneath our conclusions, to be in our bodies. Jesus came in a body, and when we breathe and sing and sit together and gather, it's in our bodies. We retrain those muscles of the heart and even of, you know, sitting here long enough, not being antsy, trying to wait through the song that we don't like. It's all useful. So whatever programming you have for what we're about to do as we worship, and band, come on up. We're gonna move right into this soon. We're going to have a time for longing for the future and hope that our tiny piece of understanding has something to do with the whole. Let's trust beyond what we can see and praise the giver of light. See the light here growing, because it is dark. And we do know that there are lions in this world, and they haven't changed yet, but they will.
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect dropdown at circleofhope.net.